Blog Talk Radio.
Only thing more disturbing or disconcerting than a mad scientist is a mad cat. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House Radio, where I am being harassed and harangued by a feline. That's okay. We're going to get through this show just fine. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. Here along with...
Meow. I'm Dave Bigger from Windish Really Badly and Spaceship One. And I believe in the trickle-down theory when you're in the top bunk.
Oh, that's a real... yeah. You should not have let that leak out, my friend. We shall reveal to you some great radio, as always, as we continue our weekend with Mad Scientist. I guess tonight would be Son of Mad Scientist.
Well, why not? Why not? Yeah, all kinds of shows and programs about science gone mad. And we have a couple more today. We had three last night and two tonight. So all kinds of fun. A very rare program tonight in the Black Castle. And, of course, one of our favorites, Quiet, Please. Should go along with that as well.
Whisper.
Yeah, I know. This is a show that aired from a library. I think. Quiet, Please.
Yes. Anyway, yeah, you know, it's odd, too, that Peter Lorre got almost stereotyped in other forms of media as the mad scientist, and I can only recall one film where he was something of a mad scientist, and that was a great movie from 1935, Mad Love. And I had read about this film, and...
It's because Peter Lorre can go from 0 to 60 in 3.2 seconds doing the going angry, you know, and I think that's because of that a mode of excitement and anger that that people can see him as a mad scientist. Many times even when he was in the cartoons, I think he was kind of portrayed as a mad scientist.
Exactly, when they parodied him, he was always as a mad scientist, but yet. Or a character with his voice type. But I can only remember Mad Love. And, oh, gosh, I had read about that film in Famous Monsters of Filmland since the mid-70s, and I had never seen it until maybe about a year ago. Year and a half ago, I saw it for the first time, and it really is a great film. I can see how that one kind of put him on the map in America. You know, M had not been widely known yet, you know?
Right. I would imagine so. A shame after all that buildup that we don't have Peter Lorre tonight, but we don't. But
that's okay. We got plenty of mad scientists for you tonight, and who knows? There might even be some products relevant to that. One never knows.
Yep. Because you always, no matter what, you always have to pay those bills or they shut you off. So that's a problem.
It is, and we got two Count 'Em Two shows. Of course, Quiet Please, as Dave mentioned, and an odd show called The Black Castle, an old-time radio mystery terror program right here in the U.S. A 15-minute program was broadcast on Mutual in 1943 and 44. Initially, it was broadcast on Tuesday and Thursday nights. But on January 31st of 44, a Monday through Friday afternoon schedule was added, with plans to drop the evening broadcast if the afternoon show worked out. This anthology program featured chilling dramatizations of people trapped in unexpected and dangerous situations.
Yeah, and I've only found a handful of these out there.
I only see
think
two.
With two a week. At the very least, and then, you know, going to the Monday through Friday type deal, you'd think that there'd be a lot of them out there, but it was more or less, I think it was more of a local broadcast than a network broadcast thing. And a lot of network, the local things didn't get saved. Just like our own local out of Cleveland, the only regularly scheduled drama out of Cleveland was the Fairy Tale Theater. And, of course, if you remember or go back in the archives, you can hear where I talked to Mel Hart, who was in that, and also was in several of my radio stage programs. But, you know, basically they didn't they made a few recordings that they listened to, and Mel said he used to listen to behind it afterwards to kind of see the timing and how everything worked out. But none of those programs, not a single one, survived, and that's what happens a lot with local programs.
Yeah. Well, this one originated at WOR in New York and was featured as part of a WOR matinee along with Consumer Quiz and songs by Sonny Skyler. Obviously a local show, you know, these were local talents, as you mentioned. So the program's continuing characters were the host, the Wizard of the Black Castle, and his Raven Diablo. Don Douglas played all the roles. Is that right, Dave?
Yeah, all the roles in there. And I think that's one thing that makes it interesting. You hear, I think we had one that Sleep No More. He did the same thing. I guess they did have a woman's voice in that last week for a short time, but mostly it was the one guy. And here it is only the one guy. And I always find that fascinating when they can switch characters that quickly and become definitely the different characters like that. I know that when on Spaceship One, when James Travers, our animator, he does the voice of RU-12 and Jim. And the two robots, and he says, "Dave, stop writing stuff where I'm so close to my different characters, you know," because he has a tough time to distinguish. But you know, he could record those separate and put them in there. But
as someone who toyed with doing voices, yeah, that's challenging. It's challenging enough to do a voice that's not your own, but then to do a list of them in order, or a couple, two, three of them in simultaneously as part of a conversation is not easy all the time.
No, it isn't. Stan Freberg was very good at that as well. If you ever catch any of the old Stan Freberg shows, where many times he's two parts in there, and sometimes he's interviewing himself. Like whenever he did the Abominable Snowman, he did the Abominable Snowman and a second one with the Abominable Snowman. And each time he was both the announcer and the Abominable Snowman. So it's
it on time, joining Fogsbane into the chat, and it looks like Gar had to run off and get ready for his show tonight.
Yep, he's got a really big shoe tonight, as he does nearly every Saturday night with a live broadcast. A far braver person than myself to do for four hours.
Yeah. That takes time, too. It takes time.
It does.
That together.
Yep.
And we know you appreciate his show, so glad that you're here joining us with our little thing here on Airy House that Gar is part of on Friday nights most of the time as well. All right, so why don't we start with the Black Castle, Dave?
Yeah, we gave it a build-up. Why don't we do that?
Sure. This is called Escape to Death. And were you able to find a date for this episode?
I do have a date for this one, from December 16th, 1942, it says here.
Welcome, friends, to the Black Castle. Come, follow me, please, for again we visit the wizard who dwells yonder in the great hall. Now up these steps to the iron-studded oaken door which yawns wide on rusted hinges, bidding us enter. Follow softly down this long stone wall corridor. Music, do you hear it? It is he, sitting before the ruined old organ, clutching the keys with his ancient bony fingers. There, perched on his shoulder, is his pet raven. Wait, it is well to stop. For here is the wizard of the Black Castle.
Yes, I see you. Good evening. You're on time, I see. Go ahead. Go ahead. Diablo, off you go. Away. Off to your question of laughter. Yes. Yes, that's a good one. Now, the strange story of escape to death. It is that hour when the city sleeps. In the residential section, all the homes are dark. All except one from which a faint light glows. Suddenly the stillness of the night is shattered by the shrill shriek of a police whistle. Another is heard, and then another, and another, and another. A frantic, panic-stricken man leaps from the shadows and races down the street. The police whistle now sounds on all sides. He is cornered. Ah, the house with the light. It is his only hope, his last chance to escape. Up the steps he bounds and into the vestibule. The police are now in close pursuit. Then flashlights are turning the shadowy corners into day and the vestibules into glaring fast. Yes, glaring fast. In desperation, the hunted man presses the button.
Good evening. I'm sorry to trouble you, but I'm looking for Mr. Brown.
You may come here.
Thanks. Thanks. Is this Mr. Brown's home?
You have come to the right place.
Well, I am lucky. That's why they call me lucky, I guess.
Follow me.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Through this door. Honorable sir, this man is looking for Mr. Brown.
What?
Mr. Brown? So he says.
Yeah. I'm looking for Larry Brown. He's a buddy of mine.
Why would you think he is here?
Well, this is the address he gave me.
Pardon, honorable sir. The police are in the vicinity. Perhaps they look for someone.
Oh,
the police are searching for someone, eh? Is it you?
Me? Why would the cops be looking for me?
Yes. Why, indeed. It is probably the police, honorable sir. Yes, searching for someone, no doubt. They saw you run up these steps, eh?
Hey, wait. Give me a break, will you? Come on, give me a chance. Please.
All right. Send them away, Nero. As you say, honorable sir. Now, sit down. Make yourself at home.
Thanks. Say, thanks a lot.
Protestations of thanks are not necessary.
Hey, this is some layout you got here. Yes, sir. This joint got some real dough, huh?
Your admiration is flattering. Is it that you want to remain till morning?
Oh, no. I'll be out of your way in no time at all. Them coppers will be gone in a minute.
It was rather ingenious, your asking for Mr. Brown to gain admission.
Yeah, I'm pretty smart cooking when it comes to using my noodle.
They will not be expecting you at your residence.
No, I'm too smart for that. Nobody knows where I live. When I'm home, they know me under another name. I just disappear once in a while and nobody thinks twice about it.
Good. That is excellent. Most excellent. Nobody knows when you disappear.
Yeah, it's okay. Say, what's your racket?
Racket? I do not comprehend.
You ain't hip, that's all. I mean, what's your swindle? Say, you gotta have one the way you gave it a hand here.
I, sir, am a scientist.
Well, what do you know about that? One of them guys that fools around with rabbits and chemicals and that sort of stuff, huh?
Yes, you are right, my new friend. You shall know more of my work. They are gone, honorable sir. They were seeking a sneak thief.
Ah, that is good. Yeah, that's enough. Well, I'll be off, I guess. Thanks a lot for the lift, Professor.
Sit down, my friend. I should like you to remain for a while.
No, not tonight, thanks. Some other time, I'll drop around and we'll cut up a few stories together.
Nero, he stays here, honorable sir.
Hey, what's the idea?
I shall tell you. You are a most fortunate young man. I am conducting an experiment. I need badly the help of a man, and I did not know where or how to get one until you, with the fortunate assistance of the police whistles, arrived at my door.
Oh,
Ain't there? No good. You're right, Professor. You are exactly what I need. You are weakling, undernourished, and cowardly. You are the perfect type. And no one will miss you.
Say, wait a minute now. That's no way to talk to a guy. I'm liable to get sore.
It would do you no good. Nero could tie you in knots with one hand. Yes, my friend. Tonight you have become most fortunate because your donation to science will be a great one.
Hey, well, what's the play?
I do not mind explaining further. The strength of the human is entirely dependent upon the development of his muscles. This is not true with many of the beasts of the jungle. Tonight I will transfer certain fluids of the giant gorilla into your quaking body.
Nah, nothing doing. I ain't gonna stand for it.
Ah, but you will. Yes. Tonight I will discover the truth. Will a man with the added values of gorilla toxin also achieve the animal strength? The mad professor and his huge servant drag the protesting and thoroughly frightened victim through the hall and down to the bottom of the stairs to a room that was completely equipped as a laboratory. Quickly, they strap the human guinea pig to an operating table. Strap upon strap until he was quite unable to move. Yes, quite unable to move.
Let me out of here. You're nuts. You ain't gonna put a knife to me.
You need not worry, my friend. You will not feel the knife. You will not know pain.
Listen, I'm just a guy that's trying to get along, see? Let me out and I'll steer somebody else here that'll do you just as good as I will.
My friend, there's an expression you Americans have to the effect. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Ah, no. No, my friend. We will as scheduled proceed.
Professor, tell me, am I going to live after it?
Oh, it would be most regrettable. Yes, very regrettable. A great loss to science if you did not. I am going to view the outcome with great interest, my friend. This, perhaps, is the beginning of a master race, a race of men who could conquer and rule the world.
I ain't the man for that, Professor. Please.
You are a cop. We will now pause.
Wait, Professor!
Nero, administer the anesthetic. Wounds honorable, sir.
Stop! Get that thing off my face!
Yes, there! The anesthetic put the man to sleep. And the operation began. Yes. The work of transferring the potion made of liquid, removed from a gorilla to the man on the table, moved along with marvelous efficiency. The professor performed his work with the skill of an artist. Soon, very soon, it was done. Now he would know. He would know if the experiment was to be a success. He would know if this weakling would rise from the operating table endowed with the tremendous strength of the giant gorilla. He stood back and removed his rubber gloves. There was a look of sharp anticipation on his face. He lives, Nero. He lives.
Yes, honorable sir, he lives.
The gorilla influences in his voice. Tell me how you feel. Tell me if you feel strong. Are I strong?
You have done this to me. No longer am I a man.
Never mind that. Never mind that. How do you feel? How do you feel? What is your strength?
My strength? Strength? Oh, I will show you.
Nero, don't let him come near me.
I will stop him, honorable sir. You will stop me. baby.
Put him down. Put him down, I say. I am your master.
I'll beat his brains out against the wall. And then you will know.
Stop. I've got a gun. I'll shoot.
You see him? You see him with his brains smashed, his head broken. Now, you try.
I'll fire if you take one more step.
Yes. Go ahead. Shoot. You won't stop me.
Yet he was able to pull off the different voices. So,
And quite a neat job there. I think he enjoyed that wizard character a little bit too much. But
a little bit too much, yeah. I didn't know wizards were, like, crazy.
Well, this guy was. But that made him fun. That would be just, if we were kids in those days, that would be just another fun show to listen to. And we're just big kids now listening to them. So it's another show to listen to. And there you have it.
Yep. Yep. That's one thing you have.
Yeah, that's one thing. Are we getting a visit from the sponsor soon?
I thought we might try to learn something from this story.
Oh, we could. I mean, you studied, if you thought, if the damn soundbite would come up, we could learn something. Harumph. Good evening. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story.
Apologies to Gar, who's back in the chat. If you have a split personality, it may not be necessarily land you in a loony bin. It could land you on a radio show. not as profound. Not as profound as one Gar would have, but it's not Gar's.
It was good. Yep. Oh, he's back. He's back.
He is back. If you think it's time to pay the bill, we probably should pay the bill in between programs here before everybody sneaks away again.
Indeed.
So, as I have a copy here to kick it off, have you ever wanted to know how things work?
You say you always wanted to be a scientist, but you couldn't afford to stay in school?
Well, you don't need a degree for something like that.
That's right, because all you need is the Eerie House Mad Scientist Kit.
The Iriad House Mad Scientist Kit has everything you need to make the transition from man to mad.
That's right. First, you get a variety of sizes of test tubes with a little plastic rack that tips over if you put too much liquid in the tubes.
You also get a Bunsen burner without a wick in it. Just because you're mad doesn't mean you're not a friend of Smokey Bear.
Included in your kit is test tubes with Christmas lights packed inside so they light up in different colors.
You also get a barely used operation game for that time when you can finally operate on the Barbie dolls. Batteries not included.
They never are. Now, you would think that you could never afford an experience like this, but you would be wrong.
Because you could always ask Tom Selleck for a reverse mortgage.
Or you could just dish out $69.99 now and send the rest after you make your first mad scientist discovery.
Just think, for the price of 14 Whoppers or 5 Taco Bell Taco Party Packs, you could be on your way to mad scientisthood.
Just call 1-900-ERIE-HOUSE to get yours. The call isn't free, but neither is the Mad Scientist Kit.
Get yours today before they're all gone.
Or before the Federal Trade Commission catches up with us.
That darn FTC. There we go.
There we go. Get yours now.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Oh,
Real Men of Genius.
This 4th of July, we salute you, Mr. Backyard Bug Zapper Inventor.
Mr. Backyard Bug Zapper Inventor.
Not content to harmlessly repel insects with lotion, you discovered a way to fry them with electricity until their bodies explode. Ah, the sounds of summer. Crickets chirping, birds singing, the blood-curdling scream of a moth having 700 volts of electricity shoot through its body.
Music to my ears.
Every night, a magical explosion of exoskeleton and insect goo that can only mean one thing. Summer's here. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. June Bug Blaster, then sit back and watch the fireworks.
Mr. Backyard Bug Zapper in bed.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, Cartersville, Georgia.
It is that time of year here in Ohio. The bugs are out. At least the lightning bugs are out, too. They're kind of cute.
Yeah, I used to chase those around growing up. I'm sure now you did, too. And
yeah, the puppy's chasing them now.
Oh, okay. Here you go. Yeah, we did, and as a kid, my kids did as a kid, and now your puppies, as a kid, they're doing the same thing.
Yeah, I remember the mean kids would smear them on their tennis shoes, some glowy stuff on their tennis. They were mean kids. Yep.
Yeah, that was before we had light up shoes. They had the first light up tennis shoes then.
Yes, but not cool. Not at the expense of that poor innocent lightning bugs. Bugging nobody.
Well, not most people anyway.
Yeah, and they're purdy.
At least they're not scary bugs. They're not scary bugs. That's
no.
There are scary bugs out there. That's not a scary bug.
Scary bug with wangs. When they can fly after you, that's I guess it's time for some quiet, please.
Well, that or, we got lots of time tonight. We might, you think we might throw a jukebox number in here before we get into quiet, please?
Sure. Why not?
I got paid, so I have a nickel left, so I can reach out over and put that wooden nickel into the jukebox there.
Scrolling.
land of ice and snow, up among the Eskimos, there's a college known as Ukiwawa.
Wa, wa, wa.
You should hear those college boys, gee, they make an awful noise when they sing their Eskimo tra-la-la.
Tra-la-la.
They've got a leader, big cheerleader, oh, what a guy.
He's got a frozen face just like an Eskimo pie.
When he says, come on, let's go, though it's 45 below, listen, but those Eskimo all holler.
Come on, let's go.
I scream, you scream, we all scream, right, scream, rah, rah.
Oogie, wah, wah, rah, rah, rah.
Tuesday, Monday, we all scream, Sunday, shh, ooh.
Roy, boy, Alice, rah.
Boola, boola, that's marula, we've got some chocolate.
I'll take the Nula.
Ice cream, you scream, we all scream, right, scream, rum, rum. Ice cream, soda water, ginger ale, hot. Ice cream, you scream, we all scream, right, scream, rum.
And that just lowered the temperature enough to bring us into quiet, please.
I think he's making fun of the way I talk.
He might be. He might be.
All right.
A warning to this one, as with many of the quiet pleases, there's a lot of surface noise. They cleaned up some as they could, but I didn't spend a great amount of time getting them clean as they could possibly be. But we did clean them up some, but there's still going to be a lot of surface noise within here. But it's still well worth the story that we're going to hear tonight.
Yep. This one is entitled, If I Should Wake Before I Die.
Yeah. Kind of a switch of words there. I think Yoda wrote that one or something.
Yes. Right, as I did. Not easy to do that one anymore. What's this one's date? Do we know?
February 27th, 1949.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. American Broadcasting Company presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper, and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for today is called If I Should Wake Before I Die. I'm a practical man. I want you to understand that I am practical, utterly practical. That I believe nothing that cannot be proved beyond the shadow of a doubt. I know that men live because the lives of many of them impinge on me, who also live. I believe that they die because I've seen them die. Beyond that, there is nothing of life or death that can be proved to my uritis, lumbago, and bursitis. That's because Sir Ralph Abbott worked on a correct scientific principle in the treatment of these ailments. So self-dividing interest is knowledge, pure knowledge. I've devoted most of my 47 years to its pursuit. The application of the knowledge I gain is a small moment to me. I may say that it's of no moment whatever. The experiment, the deduction and proof of new natural laws is the be-all and the end-all, as I believe the poets put it. And their application is not my province. Don here does not share my opinion. Don's interest is in the applications of the laws that I and others have discovered and proved.
You don't care, Dr. Anderson, whether a million men and women die as the result of the application of your discoveries?
It is a matter of no interest whatever to me, Doc.
I wonder if you really mean it.
I mean it. Implicitly.
Do you know what the world is doing with your discoveries?
Obviously, I know something of what they're doing. But I assure you, it does not interest me.
It doesn't interest you that three men are circling this Earth in a satellite rocket as a result of your research?
I am interested only in the data they may bring back from outer space. Data on which I may base further research.
It doesn't interest you that those data may become the basis for the building of fortresses out there in space, from which the Earth can be bombarded by some of the new weapons that have derived from your studies?
I didn't invent the weapons, Doc.
Other men did, using your technical data.
Yeah, that's their concern.
But does it interest you that those three men may never come back to Earth? That they may be facing a horrible death out there, 700 miles away from this Earth, alone out there in the dark?
I have no time to contemplate their troubles, Doc.
You sent them there?
I did not.
They wouldn't be there if it hadn't been for your formulas and your work.
I tell you again, that is their concern, not mine.
Do you know who they are?
Don, I'm very busy. Will you please go back to your office and let me finish my work?
Ernst Mason and Dan Seymour.
Please go away.
And your brother.
My brother.
Your kid brother, Edwin.
Can you hand me that slide rule, please?
Will you listen to me?
The other one, please.
Dr. Anderson, I tell you that... I'll answer. Yes. Well, this is Don, Major. When? You sure? Yes, he's here. No, I don't think so. I'll tell him. Dr. Anderson.
Well?
That was Major Hilton over at the center. They had another message from the satellite rocket at 1455. From your brother, Edward.
What did you say?
From 700 miles out in space. From a rocket that's been circling the Earth for 3 months now, alone out there in the cold void. Such a little hope of ever coming back to warmth and light and friends. From the dark and the cold.
What are you talking about?
Your brother Edward. He's dead. Somewhere out there in space, he's dead. Do you hear me? He sent you a message. He died before he finished it. Tell my brother, he said. Tell my brother if I should wake before I die... And he died before he finished it. Do you know what that means? Do you hear me? Your brother!
Just hand me that notebook there, will you? No, the one with the brown cover. Thanks. Knowledge is all. The application of the knowledge is unimportant, unless it leads to further knowledge. I have no theories of life or death or of creation. Explanation or the attempted explanation is futile and unnecessary. There are no secrets of life or death. They are chemical processes peculiar to man. They exist, and that's all. Perhaps someday I or one of my colleagues will discover the principles of this living and dying. But there's a long, long apprenticeship ahead of us before we can turn to that phase of science. And in the meantime, there are problems to be solved, answers to be proved. And it's of no importance what temporary use is made of the results of our researches. This space rocket would have been useful, no doubt, in charting the effects of cosmic radiation. But it's gone. We must dismiss it as an expedient that failed. Knowledge. Knowledge is the goal. All else is unimportant. Never forget that. It's worth any price.
Doesn't it depend just a little, Dr. Anderson, on who pays the price?
What? the ones who die in the search? Why, as long as the important ones don't die, the price is reasonable. Who is to decide which are the unimportant ones? I am important. Yes, to yourself, to the world. The others are important to the world, too.
Nonsense.
There wouldn't be any world without them, Doctor.
Well, in that sense...
People like your brother.
He was dispensable to science.
To you, personally?
Are you implying that I didn't love my brother?
Am I?
I did.
I wonder.
Now, please don't try to involve me in an emotional experience, Don. I have work to do.
It might do you some good, Dr. Anderson, if you did get involved in an emotional experience. It might wake you up.
I'm awake, thank you.
No, you're not.
Kindly explain what you mean by that.
No. I don't think I will, Doctor.
Well, I don't know what you mean.
You know what you're doing.
I do.
You know that the application of your research and experiment is producing the most frightful weapons the world has ever seen.
That's not my fault. That's application again.
Well, they wouldn't exist without what you know, what you've proved.
In that case, I am only helping my country.
That's what the others say.
What others?
The other scientists in other countries. They're helping their countries, too.
Well, that's their privilege.
You realize that you and the others are distilling destruction for the whole world, don't you?
That's the fault of you young military men who are converting pure research into weapons for war.
I grant that. But you are the ones that gave us that research. It's your dreams, not ours.
I wish you'd stop talking of dreams.
Well, I wish...
Yeah, you wish what?
I remember... what your brother sent to you from way out there in space. Dying in a rocket ship. A spaceship that grew out of your dreams.
Yeah, I've forgotten it.
Why, Dr. Anderson, you must remember.
No.
It's like that little prayer that kids say at bedtime. Only your brother changed it around a little. He knew what he was talking about. You remember?
Something sentimental. I remember I used to say it when we were children at night. Now I lay me down to sleep. If I should die before I wake...
That isn't what your brother said. Dying out there in the cold and the dark.
I don't...
I'd try to remember it if I were you, Doctor. Your brother said, if I should wake before I die...
It doesn't make sense.
Oh, yes, it does, Doctor. He was telling you to wake up before you die. Wake up, Doctor, before you die and the world dies with you.
There is nothing I can do. I have committed myself to this and I've gone too far. The others, Barshoff and Beveridge and Delaplaine, they have gone too far, too. We cannot stop. It's no dream, no dream at all. It is pure science. What if they have perverted our dreams? Not dreams. What if they have perverted our studies, our equations, our living thoughts to weapons of destruction? It was not our fault. I was not my brother's keeper.
But he died far, far out there in the illimitable reaches of immeasurable cold. Out where the cosmic dust lies in great cold clouds. There is no time.
The alchemists tried for thousands of years to transmute base metals into precious ones. I only carried out their fumbling task.
But you succeeded, you and the others.
I didn't pollute the waters of Bikini.
No. You sat in a snug office 8,000 miles away. And the reports of the awful upheaval of the sea came to you. And you read them and smiled. You leaned back in your chair and smiled. They've proved what we knew could be proved, you said. And you smiled.
It was not my fault.
You dreamed that destruction leaped from the floor of the sea and the waters were charged with death, and you smiled in your dream.
It was no dream.
And your brother and two other men shook hands with you and stepped into the rocket shell that was to be their tomb, and that tomb was the reality of your dream.
No.
And you dream now of more wonders upon the earth, upon this earth that one day you will destroy, you with your own hands.
No, I say...
Your dream grows brighter and brighter until the whole universe is blotted out, and you stretch out your hands for reality. And there's only black.
Attention, please. Attention, please. In 30 seconds, Project Phaeton will be activated. In 30 seconds, Project Phaeton will be activated. 30 seconds.
Wait. I tell you that... No, no, not now. Come over here to the window.
No, I...
You must.
28
Bring
seconds.
Bring your... No, no, take those binoculars from the desk.
Seconds.
Quick, come on. Is this the end, then? This is Project Phaeton. What is
seconds.
It? Over here. Where you can see the moon.
Seconds.
Hurry.
23 seconds.
What is it?
22 seconds.
We're going to reach the moon.
Seconds.
What?
20
Here.
Seconds.
Watch the radar.
Seconds.
No, the binoculars won't do you any good.
Seconds.
Here.
17
Watch.
Seconds.
This is the project I heard about. And where did you hear about
seconds.
It? There's been talk.
Yeah,
I'll
seconds.
Have somebody's head for that.
13
Watch.
Seconds.
Watch. Is
seconds.
It just another radar contact?
Seven
We're
seconds.
Going to reach it. We've kept it a secret for so long.
Seconds.
Only 10 seconds.
Nine
what are
seconds.
You going to do? The beam is on.
Eight
what are you
seconds.
Going to do? Going to reach the moon
Seven
with a projectile.
Seconds.
Atomic fission projectile.
6 seconds.
Watch.
5 seconds.
Watch. Oh,
Four
Dr. Anderson.
Seconds.
No.
3 seconds. 2 seconds.
If we do this...
1 second...
I didn't hear. Wait.
I'm looking. I don't see nothing.
It's radio. Of course you can't see it.
Oh, duh. No wonder.
Hey, you can't go wrong with Willis Cooper. I mean, the guy that created Lights Out and ran it for a few years all by himself and then turned on to Quiet Please, who wrote this program from 47 to 49 and... probably hear his voice at the very end of it again, as he always came on saying what was going to happen next week. Did some television. He wrote a few movies. So he was all over the place. And but I think horror really was his forte. So
a busy little bee, wasn't he?
He was a busy little bee. And, you know, because I think that the movie, the first movie he did was Son of Frankenstein, I believe. He wrote that script for that.
Ooh.
Which is one of my favorites of, his screenplay for the Son of Frankenstein introduced the much parodied character of Igor, or Wygor, or whatever. He actually contributed to a few of the Mr. Moto films at that same time.
So Son of Frankenstein, is that your... Were you saying, Dave, that that's one of your favorites
I think of the Frankenstein... of course, the first one is definitely a classic, but I think Son of Frankenstein was really... Of the three, the son, the bride, and Frankenstein, to me, I think that's really my favorite.
It is a good one. You've got Lionel Atwill, you've got Basil Rathbone, of course you've got... Boris Karloff and Bela as I Igor. The
Igor, yes.
Igor. He was a good character.
Much parodied, yes. As a matter of fact, Al Klesch got to play him, got to play Igor in the musical version of Young Frankenstein.
Oh, how
and,
fun.
And I did get to go see his performance. It was here in Akron at the Weathervane Theater.
Oh, I would have went to see that. Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. The whole show was absolutely amazing. It was, but Al, in the few scenes that he was in, and that's the only part he wanted. Because it is so much work to be in those plays and community theater plays and such for no money. That he says, every once in a while when I decide that I want to do a part, I either go for one part or nothing. Where some people go try out, and if they don't get that, they might get offered another part. This is just one of the things. He says, no, that's the part I want, or I don't want any part of it. And he got it. And he was absolutely fantastic with it. You know how crazy Al is. You've seen enough of his work.
Yes.
Through the Weirdness Really Bad that. It just what a tremendous! The whole show was wonderful, but I tell you what, he was absolutely hilarious, and that's one of the fun stories. It wasn't one of the fun parts in the original movie with Marty Feldman as Igor as well.
Oh my gosh, that practically made the film.
Yes,
his interactions with Gene Wilder as the doctor were great.
Yes.
Yep.
So,
and we have a little more radio to interact with, and who knows, we may hit some bonus, more bonus material right after the conclusion of If I Should Wake Before I Die. Let's find out exactly what that does mean as we continue with Quiet Please.
Don, look. Pray the Lord, my soul to take.
One does not always accurately foresee the results of a projected experiment. That, however, is the purpose of experiments, to prove or disprove a theory, a scientific conception. If it were possible to conduct all one's experiments personally, the margin of error would naturally be reduced to the minimum. But when a large number of other individuals enter into the operation, error and the possibility of error is naturally multiplied. Now, that's an interesting thought. I must make a note of it. In what ratio does probable error increase with the addition of new minds to a particular project? I must deduce a formula. At the moment, I do not know exactly what went wrong. It's within the realm of possibility that I might have made a slight miscalculation myself. Although, naturally, I doubt that. It's possible that fissionable material reacts with greater celerity where atmosphere, as we know it, is lacking. It is possible that there were on the moon certain elements unknown to us, elements that do not show up in spectrometric analyses, elements particularly amenable to chain reaction of unprecedented violence. It's mildly shocking to realize the extent of the damage done by Project Phaeton. However, I'm reminded of the theory of the philosopher Berkeley that one must doubt everything outside the circle of one's own consciousness. And certainly I have the evidence of my own consciousness. The image of the moon instantaneously disappeared on the radar screen at the precise second when my calculations showed that the projectile had reached the moon's surface. And although this is the time of the full moon, for three nights now in succession, it has not appeared in its customary place in the firmament. Therefore, I am led to an ineluctable conclusion, which is corroborated by other hearsay evidence. It is a fact. And I state it positively that the moon has been utterly destroyed as a result of Project Phaeton. Never again the sweet moonlight of the lovers. Never more the harvest moon
rising above the hills on an October night. But science is vindicated. Science has done it. Pure science went into the calculations the great thinking machines ground and chattered, and the data poured out. The data that I alone knew would come. Equations no human mind could imagine. Beautiful, pure mathematical thoughts far beyond the conception.
Far beyond the conception of the ones who die.
Calculations of mass and energy and the cosmic movements of all the planets. Allowances for the gravitation of stars 40 light years away. Corrections for the rotation of the Earth. The absolute cold of 240,000 miles of space. Pinpointed on the great crater of Copernicus.
That man has gazed on and pondered since the world began. But no man shall ever see
it. The hand of man has reached out into space and found a target. Pure, pure thought that sought out the farthest reaches of the mind and devised the weapon.
And in every harbor of the world, the tides rushed out, and the very floor of the sea was plain to human eyes for one last look. And far out on the breast of the ocean, great tidal waves that overtook and destroyed everything that floated.
Man has at last conquered space.
And thousands dead for miles inland from the shore when the waters returned. And the moon.
I did not know we would destroy the moon, I tell you. I thought there would be a small explosion that we could see.
And man has destroyed what God hath wrought. You've drained well, my doctor, my scientist, brother.
It was an experiment.
And well done. Well completed.
For lives are the price of progress.
So they are. So they are.
There will be no more wars, Don. Don't you understand that? We have proved that modern war is so destructive that no nation can afford to fight them. That's no dream.
Yes, yes, you have proved that. You have destroyed one world. Very pretty demonstration.
It was no world. It was the moon, the dead moon.
Dead, yes. Gone, yes. But perhaps it was a world, Dr. Anderson.
Nonsense.
The vegetation on the moon, you knew that. Radar proved it long ago, way back in 1948.
Well,
why could there not have been people?
It couldn't be proved.
It will never be proved now. There's only dust. And our own world. Can you think of what has happened on our own world and look any man in the eye?
I didn't intend that.
But you accomplished it.
I know it, but
you have other experiments in mind, I assume?
Well, not immediately, of course.
Of course.
And not for years.
Of course not.
We have to go on.
Do you? You know the end of it all.
We can't stop now. We started this thing and there's no turning back.
The point of no return.
Exactly. We have accomplished a thing that human minds could never imagine.
You have dreamed, and you go on dreaming of destruction.
No, no. We'll take care next time.
You will.
Of course we will. This is an unfortunate accident.
An accident? 10 million people killed on this continent alone. Cities destroyed that can never be rebuilt. The very moon, the ageless satellite of the Earth, blown to dust. Haven't you dreamed enough?
It is not a dream.
You will not wake before you die, before we die.
What can I do?
You can stop it.
Don, it can't be stopped.
It must be stopped. Man wasn't put on Earth to die by his own hand, to be murdered by his fellow men.
But what can I do?
Stop!
We can't stop. We've started a chain reaction among peoples. You know what chain reactions are. You know what follows. You know that a simple fuse lit by a tiny match can set off an explosion.
That will destroy the world.
There is nothing to be done.
Nothing?
Warshawt and Beveridge and Delaplaine and I say it in all humility. We know all there is to know about these cosmic forces. We know more than any other four men in the world.
Do you four know how to stop this progress?
I know. I think they know.
But you won't stop?
How?
Well, if you four could agree to put aside all this.
We can't. There is no hope.
We must go on to destruction?
We must go on.
How do you know you must go on?
I know.
How do you know?
I have been told.
By the others?
Yes.
They'll go on if you give up?
They will. I know.
What if they died?
They are the directing brains of all the research in their countries.
And?
If they died, their programs will be set back so far. They won't die.
They have died.
What did you say?
I said they have died.
It's impossible.
They did.
How do you know they died? When?
They died on a ship in the Atlantic Ocean.
When?
When everybody else died on the Atlantic Ocean.
In the tidal wave.
Yes. You disposed of them very neatly.
I didn't.
You killed them just as you killed all those others.
They're dead.
My business to know about that, Dr. Anderson.
Marshall. Some beverage. And got a plane.
You have no rivals now, Dr. Anderson.
Why, that's right. We're in front of the world.
What's left of it?
There's nobody to carry on their work.
Are you sure?
Why, I know. But now,
yes,
now. What were they coming here for?
I didn't say they were coming here.
They were, though. I know they were. But what? Why were they coming here?
Don't you know, Dr. Anderson?
To kill me. To murder me.
Why, of course, they knew me. They heard about Project Theater.
They knew if they murdered me, that would stop all our developments here. And they would ally themselves against us, and without the weapons that I could devise, they would... Why, they'd win the war!
What war, Dr. Anderson?
What war? Why, they'd declare war on us. No, they wouldn't declare war on us. They'd just destroy us overnight.
No.
What?
No. They weren't coming here to kill you.
I know they were.
No.
What then?
They were coming here to make a deal with you.
A deal?
Yes. They were afraid.
Of what?
Of the thing that killed them.
Tied away. But that, they didn't know what it was to be, but they...
Well, maybe they were afraid of it. Maybe they were afraid of what you'd do next.
Well, they'd better be afraid.
Oh, they're not anymore. They're dead.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well,
remember what your brother said?
Yes, I remember. But what?
Why, they awoke before they died, Dr. Anderson.
It didn't do them any good.
No, it didn't, did it?
No, it certainly didn't.
Because you didn't awake.
I...
Now you're the only one left. You know all the secrets. You know more than any other man in the whole world.
I do. Don't I?
It's in your power now to go ahead and do things that the others can't duplicate. But they can't even come near.
It's my patriotic duty.
Is it?
I've got to. Why, Don, if I could tell you some of the things I've already planned. Some of the most amazing things. Why, I tell you, your mind couldn't even begin to comprehend what I can do.
And not worry about competition.
That's right.
But there may not be any place left for you to do these wonderful things, Doctor.
Why not?
Why, there might not be any world left. Don't you see?
But I can't just... Sit here?
No, of course not.
I can't stagnate.
I agree.
Well, I've spent my whole life studying, learning, thinking and studying again. I've gone farther into nuclear fission than any other man in history. I know more than even they knew. Do you mean that I should give this all up and just sit here?
Not at all, Doctor.
Listen to me. I'll show you. There's one little thing. One simple little operation. One... Why, it's as simple as turning a switch the wrong way.
Yes?
It would neutralize every single atom of fissionable material in the world today.
Really?
I mean it. It would neutralize every stockpile in the world, and it would be 100 years before anybody could repair even one little bomb.
Do you realize that? There's only one catch in it. What? You. If you were still around, you and only you in all the world could, well, shall I say, unneutralize it.
That's right.
Yes.
And you want me to give it all up?
Yes.
I can't do it, Don. I've explained that to you. There's nobody left to carry on but me.
Nobody but you.
That's right.
Dr. Anderson, do you want to die?
What?
I say, do you want to die?
Die? Why, I've never particularly thought about dying, Don. Do you know that?
Not personally, you mean.
Yeah, that's right. It's curious.
But you don't mind bringing death to a great many other people, do you? Do you? To our brother Edward.
I didn't.
I'm your brother too, Sam. I'll die too, and everybody else will die, and you'll die by your hand if you don't give it up.
I'll die. But I can't do it, I tell you.
You're still dreaming, Sam.
I tell you, I'm not dreaming.
It isn't too late to wake up, Sam.
I'm not dreaming.
Yes, you are, Sam, and it's time to wake up,
I tell you. The title of today's Quiet Please story is If I Should Wake Before I Die. Written and directed by Willis Cooper, the man who spoke to you was Ernest Jeffel. And my brother Don was played by Don Briggs. As usual, music for Quiet Please is played by Albert Berman. Now, for a word about next week, if he can get through the door, here is our writer-producer, Willis Cooper.
Thank you for listening to Quiet Please. Next week, I have a story for you about the man who knew everything.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Jeffel.
Good old Bob points
ABC,
out...
ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Good old Bob points out the whole show, just a dialogue between two guys, two dudes.
Yep, that's a very minimal cast, and it gives you, the people that are in there usually are, you know, have a little bit more meaty part. You know, Dale, he also wrote one of the TV Lights Out. It's one of my favorite episodes, and you've used to share this when you ran your TV station. He wrote the Dead Man's Coat episode.
Oh.
With, I think it was, that was with Basil Rathbone, I believe.
Basil.
Basil.
ACW joined us just in time. What an ending. Yes, to that story, it was quite an ending.
It was. And a great series of interesting things. I thought it was kind of funny as he was saying, if he can get in through the doorway. Willis Cooper was a big guy, and I just thought that was so funny. Yeah, if he could get in through the doorway, and what's funny is Willis Cooper. He his name is W I L L I S. But he changed it to W-Y-L-L-I-S when he got to New York. He started off in Chicago, which is where Lights Out started. And he changed it to W-Y-L-L-I-S because of his wife's belief in numerology. And even though it's the same amount of letters, it has something to do with, I guess, the letters themselves, I guess. I don't know. I'm not into numerology, but I thought that was a pretty cool thing there.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Here's something else we probably didn't know. Erie House Radio proudly presents A Garless Moral of the Story.
With apologies to Gar. Only a mad scientist would ever blow up the moon. After all, what did the man on the moon do to him?
Meow, 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 meow.
There you go.
There you go.
Kittens have gone mad. They've gone mad. At least this one over here in my house has.
He's at least disappointed, if not mad, that's for sure. Disappointed he can't go upstairs and roam around.
He's taking it out on my headset cord here, which he has never, ever bothered. I've been doing this show for almost as long as he's been alive. He's never bothered this cord. What the hell is wrong? Well, he's a cat. He's a cat. That's all you need to say.
Yep, yep. Always plotting, always plotting.
Always plotting. And I've plotted myself a trip up to the wheel. We've got time. Let's go.
Ah, cool.
And see what kind of radio treats come up.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
What is your Sam Shovel detective story for tonight, Luke?
I think I'll do one of my old Western cases. I call it the case of the general who opened up a drive-in and was caught selling horse meat. Or Custer's last hamburger stand.
Well, now you're talking. Let's do it.
I'm Sam Shovel, private detective.
I remember my first case. Three-eyed Maxie the murderer. He had three eyes. He was the only man in the world with 20-20-20 vision. And there was my second case. Terrible Tony, the toughest gangster in Los Angeles. He was a bronze giant with muscles of steel and an iron fist. I had to shoot him. May he rust in peace. Fifteen years in the detective business takes a lot out of you. But I feel as strong and vigorous as the day I started. Right now, I could tear Superman in half. But I don't want to ruin the rest of the paper. I feel kind of thirsty. I go to the sink. This Los Angeles water is getting hotter every day. I glance out of my window. There's the headquarters of the Republican Club. On the window, there's a sign, GOP. I just found out what GOP means. Gone out permanently. I look down at my desk. There's my new wristwatch. My new wristwatch. It's a shockproof, non-magnetic, waterproof watch. The directions say don't take this watch out of the box. Fresh air ruins it. I think I'll give it to my secretary. What a secretary. She got the job the hard way. The hard way. She knew how to type. Lying next to my watch is my shotgun. I decide to see if it's loaded. I point it at the floor and pull the trigger. I look down at the floor. Mm-hmm. When did I buy open-toed shoes? I reach in my coat pocket. Here's a wallet I found last night. I hope I can find the owner. I check to see what's in the wallet. Here's a card. If it's found, return to Mr. Nichols, Del Mar Hotel. Here's a driver's license. Here's Mr. Nichols, Del Mar Hotel. Here's a birth certificate with the name Nichols. Here's the pink slip for a new Hudson sedan issued to Mr. Nichols, Del Mar Hotel. Well, here's $600 in cash. Looks like I'll have to keep the money. Serves that guy right. He should carry some identification. Name on the money is Washington. Now, let me see. Oh, yes. It's about time for my pal, Lieutenant Abbott of the Homicide Squad, to show up. Abbott had a pretty tough week chasing crooks. Monday night, he was held up on Main Street. Tuesday night it was held up on Broadway. Wednesday night it was held up on Sunset Boulevard. If Abbott would stay out of those saloons, he wouldn't need anybody to hold him up. Lieutenant Abbott don't have to work. He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. This was okay until he found out that all the other kids had tongues. It's not easy to be born with a silver spoon in your mouth. Up to the time Abbott was 19, all he could say was Rogers Brothers, 1847. Before he became a detective, Abbott was a motorcycle cop. He was the only cop on the force that had traffic eyes. Real traffic eyes. They'd always look both ways before crossing each other. No matter what case Lieutenant Abbott goes out on, he's never stuck. Hello, Sam Shovel, private detective speaking.
Hello, Sam. This is Lieutenant Abbott. Sam, what time do the vaults open in the Fourth National Bank?
At 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Not till 9 o'clock tomorrow morning?
That's right, Lieutenant Abbott. You can't get in those vaults till 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Who wants to get in? I'm trying to get out.
Suddenly, my door opened.
Sam Shovel.
It was my pal, Lieutenant Abbott. He was scared to death. He was perspiring. He was sweating bullets. Lieutenant Abbott, how'd you get out of that bank vault?
Sam, I'll tell it to you all in a nutshell.
Can't you tell it to me here? I don't think we'd both fit in a nutshell.
Sam, I've been working on a series of bank burglaries. Monday night, the Kelly gang held up the First National Bank. Tuesday, they held up the Second National Bank. Wednesday, they held up the Third National Bank. So tonight, I was waiting for them at the Fourth National Bank.
And you caught them?
Nah. Tonight, they held up the First National Bank again. But enough about myself. Enough about my trouble, Sam. Sam, you don't look good. What's the matter?
I didn't get any sleep last night, Lieutenant. A burglar climbed into my bedroom window and made me get out of bed. I stood there shivering in my long underwear.
Why didn't you holler for help?
He had a gun, and I was afraid to open my trap. After the burglar left, I still couldn't get any sleep. I was worried about my brother Pat. He kept poking his head into my room.
Well, lots of guys poke their heads into their brother's rooms.
On the end of a stick?
Sam, did you hear those shots?
They came from the office next door.
Who rents that office next door?
An organization called the American Society of Patriotic Americans for the preservation of freedom in the United States of all and for all patriotic Americans.
What do they do?
They're foreign spies.
Sam, look. There's the guy that did the shooting. He's coming in here. He's got a gun.
Ah, so this is the place I've been looking for, eh? Where's Sam Shovel, the private detective?
What do you want with him?
I'm going to kill him. I hate radio detectives. I hate them all. The Thin Man, the Fat Man, Ellery Queen. But most of all, I hate Sam Shovel. I'm going to gouge his eyes out. I'll fill him with lead. Now, who are you?
Oh, I'm just an ordinary policeman. Honest, mister, I'm not a radio detective.
And you? Who are you, fatso?
Well, I'm the... Don't stand there, Rabbit. Hand me my cookbook.
Cookbook? Who are you?
Don't you recognize me? Mary Margaret McBride.
Oh, so you're the one that gives out those recipes, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if there's anything I hate worse than radio detectives, it's those recipe programs. I'll kill them all.
A little bit of fun with Abbott and Costello. And we still got a little bit more time, don't we, Dave? Dave? I think we're Dave-less. We're going to move on for a little something from the sponsors.
Never borrow money needlessly just when you must. Borrow them where loans are a specialty from folks you trust. Borrow confidently from HSBC.
Household Finance Corporation offices are listed in your telephone book.
You may not find us on your TV, because in case you did not know, we're being brought to you by, brought to you by, brought to you by RADI. Oh.
That's Erie House Radio, to be specific. And it seems like Dave is disconnected or otherwise engaged, so let us continue with another little treat for you. Oh, what shall we have? Anybody have a preference in the chat? How about a song or how about a short? What'll it be? Wheel? Hey, you can even call us to tell us at 646-378-0264. Wish Dave would dial that and come on back to join me. Not sure where he went. But we'll go ahead and spin, 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 says CW, so spin we shall. As soon as I find my wheel, it's dark in here.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it becomes my pleasure. Jerry Lewis, how many times must I tell her you're not supposed to come out here until you're introduced?
What introduced? I'm Jerry. You're Dean. How do you do? Pleased to meet you. Let's get on with the show.
Now, look, Jerry, forget it. Forget the introduction. Now, tell me, have you finished my laundry yet?
Well, I finished your laundry. Listen there, Dean Martin. I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to make everybody think that just because I'm young and I'm an idiot, I do all your laundry. You want people to think I take care of your shirts and I wash and starch and dry and iron them. But it won't work. See, I'm wise to you, buddy. I'm wise to you. And another thing.
What?
The lipstick mark on your blue shirt doesn't rub out.
Now, listen, Jerry. I'm getting mighty tired of your complaining. What makes you act like such a big shot?
Listen, Alfred.
Alfred?
I read in one of them movie magazines that I'm a big picture star, just like Oscar March.
Oscar March? Oscar, I never heard of him.
Well, that shows how much you know. Oscar March is a star, death of a salesman. Why, he may even win a Frederick this year.
You know something, Jer? You're going to drive me to the bug house.
Oh, no, you don't, Dean Martin. I'll stand still for doing the laundry, but I'm not going to be your chauffeur.
Jerry, driving someone to the bug house is just a figure of speech.
Oh, well, that's different. Will you pay for the gas?
Look, now, let's stop arguing, huh? Nobody wins anyway. It's like an immovable object that meets an
irresistible, I noticed.
An immovable object that meets an irresistible force.
I was right.
Mm-hmm.
Dean.
What?
I'm irresistible.
All right, Jer. I give up. You win. Tell me, who's our first guest tonight?
Guys, Dean, we don't have a first guest, but I have an idea that I think we will find Peachy, Ginger, Dandy, Snappy, and Keen.
You're good going.
Why don't we do one of those tender dramatic scenes, you know, where you sing one part and I talk the other part?
Well, all righty, ladies and gentlemen. Jerry and I give you our impression of a man whose girlfriend has just run out on him. He's trying to forget her, but everything he touches we call another memory. And away we go. A cigarette that bears a lipstick's trace.
Why does that man insist upon wearing makeup?
An airline ticket to romantic places.
Romantic places. We took one lousy flight from Idlewood to Burbank. Even then we were grounded six times because of dust.
And still my heart has wings.
What happened to the mima?
These foolish things remind me of you.
We had so much to make us happy. You love me despite my old clothes, and I love you despite your old nose.
A tinkling piano in the next apartment.
I haven't slept a wink in 3 days.
Those stumbling words that told you what my heart meant.
What stumbling words? You slapped my back, I boy.
A fairground's painted swing. These foolish things remind me of you.
Foolish things, my foot, they're ridiculous. I was saying to Selma just the other day, Selma, I said, no, listen to this. Selma, I said, you have no idea. He carries on about the least little thing, my lipstick traces, my airline tickets, my painted swings. To help me, I'll go mad from that man.
You came, you saw, you conquered me.
Well, I did beat you 2 folds out of 3.
When you did that to me, I knew somehow it had to be.
Like I told Selma, this thing is just too big for the both of us.
The winds of March that make my heart a dancer.
The winds of March indeed. Why, that poor Arthur Murray worked his feet to the bone.
The telephone rings, but who's to answer? Oh, how the ghost of you cling.
You can't forget me, Booby.
These foolish things
remind me of you.
Hey, how about that? Abbott and Costello and Martin and Lewis. A little bonus for you tonight.
Two great teams. You know, I listened to the Martin Lewis pilot episode, which had Bob Hope, and it was not a show that was aired. Partially you could tell because it went like 40 minutes long because they got to a certain point where Jerry Lewis was trying to ad lib with Bob Hope, and Bob Hope just murdered him. Yeah. Absolutely murdered him. Oh my goodness, that was, yeah. I'll have to pull out that sometime. And the rest of the show that went on next week with a different guest, with the actual first episode, had a different guest. So a lot of the sequences were the same, but that they're probably lucky that they never aired that because it was just Bob.
Not a good look. Not a good look.
No,
Dave, it amazes me how you dig up all these great, really, they're treasures. And that's what we're going to do next week. We're digging for buried treasure on Friday and
treasures.
Saturday night.
Yes, yep. Yes, we are.
Yeah, we got Suspense, Escape, and the Whistler on Friday. And CBS Radio Mystery Theater returns in a quick Yankee Yarns. That's on Saturday. With all the tales about buried treasure. And real quick, we got someone right here to help us say farewell. I'll bet it is the lovely and delightful one. Welcome.
Thank you. Oh, wait, you meant CW. Okay.
Oh, yeah, I know. I thought you meant Dave. Oh, okay.
I did. Kind of. You know.
Yeah, I didn't know if Dave would make it back, so I didn't want you to have to end the show all by your solo. So
well, that was kind of you. I could have winged it, but your assistance and presence is always appreciated. Just in time to say the goodbye to everyone until next weekend when we dig again for buried treasure. 5 tales for you next weekend. So. Farewell, good night, good luck in prison, and come on, little mouse, you gotta work here.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her!
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
There we go.
There you go. Almost there. There you go.
Well, that was kind of fun.
Hey, thanks for calling in, CW, to save the day.
Yeah.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. There is no need to be fear, because I'm here. Never fear.
There you go. There you go.
There's no need to fear. CW is here.
So, do you have a favorite mad scientist, CW?
Well, I mentioned yesterday, Dr. Fives is right up there in top 10. I mean, absolutely fabulous.
A classy and inventive with his methods of death, especially in the first movie.
Oh, yeah.
What did he style him after? The biblical plagues, did he not?
Yes, he did. He did. Ingenious.
Yeah.
And I like that movie because I'm sure everyone on the set probably was thinking, this is such a howling movie. No one's going to see it. Who knew? And then they spawned a sequel. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, it is.
It was definitely a unique film. Definitely a unique film. And became quite the cult classic. It's one of these shows that had more of an afterlife than when it was originally released. Obviously, enough interest to get a second film, but boy, it was unique, shall we say?
Oh, indeed.
When I was in my teens, devouring the famous monsters of Filmland. Right at that same time, and, you know, we still had the horror hosts on television, unhosted on Sunday nights, we got Hammer Films. I believe they started like 11 or 12. And I was, you know, just getting into that teen age where you could stay up all night, you know, and it didn't phase you. So that's where I first got to see Dr. Fives.
Wonderful. Yeah. And I was trying to rack my brain, were there any female mad scientist, and there was Lady Frankenstein, daughter of the doctor, but also in more modern movies, in the very first Wonder Woman solo movie, and I cannot remember the doctor's name. She is a scientist. Half of her face is artificial. She has a mask on it, but she creates this gas that is absolutely insidious.
Usually men do that.
Yeah,
we make some pretty insidious gases, I've been told.
Yes. Well, if you eat ghost peppers, it can happen to anyone.
True.
I most scientists are somewhat mad. I mean, think of all the weapons that they created for Bond, and I mean, you have to be crazy to come up with some of the things that they were coming up with for that.
Well, there's the guy who made the stuff for Maxwell Smart.
Yes, that was my next.
Was equally as crazy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And I don't know if Man from U.N.C.L.E. had their own gadgets, but they didn't have a cue per se, someone who was there. They were just sort of handed these different gadgets.
We're in that era. How about Wild Wild West?
Oh, steampunk.
Yeah.
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 The movie and the TV show. That was a great villain. Mad Scientist.
Dr. Lovelace, Nicolito Lovelace.
Yes, yes. Yep. And I thought Paul Williams was hilarious. I thought Paul Williams was absolutely hilarious on that show.
My favorite comic book mad scientist would have to be Dr. Doom. Victor Von Doom.
Oh, Victor Von Doom, indeed.
He was a much better character in the comics than in the films so far. Mm-hmm. I have not seen I have high expectations, I guess, because he was my favorite villain. He just wasn't quite sinister enough in the films.
Yeah, they did calm him down a little bit from everything. I mean, even in the Stan Lee Fantastic Four cartoon, he was a little tad more insidious than he was in the motion pictures.
Yeah. But he was smart. When faced with something like of the level of like Galactus, he would team up with superheroes because he figures, well, I can't take over the world if there is no world, so I might as well team up with these guys for a while.
Indeed. And if you're speaking about comic book doctors, remember that Pamela Isley, at least in some of the comics, depending upon which origin story you're going, and in the movies, was a doctor who turned herself into, by happenstance or misadventure, Poison Ivy. And Harleen Quinzel was a certified doctor before she went off the deep end to become Harley Quinn.
Truly a mad doctor, then.
Yeah.
Yep, before she went off to be with her pudding.
We were talking earlier about Peter Lorre and also the Frankenstein movies and Igor. And, like, again, when people would do spoofs, it seems like they would call Igor more like a Peter Lorre or the Dwight Frye character from the first movie, when really Igor was much different the way Lugosi portrayed him.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And question, in The Bride of Frankenstein with Boris Karloff, when Dr. Frankenstein had to make the bride, who was that other doctor?
Actor? Dr. Pretorius. There you go for a mad doctor. Dr. Pretorius, played by Ernest Thysinger.
Thank you. That was driving me crazy. I can remember that wild
kind of a friend of James Whale. They were of the same persuasion. They had similar interests.
They were both LGBTQ. Come on.
Yeah,
in the 21st century.
they were in a time when you didn't talk about it. And I've mentioned it here before on this show, but there's a really good story about James Whale starring, the gentleman who plays Magneto, called Gods and Monsters. Brendan Fraser is in it, too.
Yes, Gods and Monsters. Sir Ian McKellen.
Mm-hmm. Very good film. Very good film. And from what I've read, it's not too far from truth of James Whale's life.
Yeah. According to the movie, he said he found Boris Karloff rather boring. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to find that hard to believe.
Oh, they did not get along at all. James Whale Karloff often felt that Whale would deliberately make them shoot scenes over where he had to carry great weights while wearing the Frankenstein outfit. And he had problems with his back much later that Wales had a kind of a mean streak, a cruel streak to him.
Wow.
Because I think originally they wanted Lugosi, and Lugosi later even admitted that he maybe should not have turned his nose up at the Frankenstein role because he thought, no dialogue. That's not good enough for me.
Yeah. Then in fact, he was probably turned off by all the makeup at the time. I mean, that was
ironically, he did end up playing the monster in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. Yeah.
That's true.
So strange.
But speaking of monstrous directors, there was one thing I was reading lately about Charlton Heston, and someone was asking, was there a director that you really didn't get along with? And he didn't really say anything, but he did own up to the fact that he did a Western, and I think it was Sam Peckinpah was directing him, and he basically, Sam Peckinpah was, those, I don't know what you call them, cherry picker director's chairs where they anchor it down and then the director is lifted up so they can get a bird's eye view.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Heston got really fed up with him once and drove his horse at full gallop right at him, and Peckinpah was starting to yell, put me up. And he didn't stop. And pretty much that calmed Peckinpah down because for everything I've had on the set, Heston was pretty even-tempered on the set. But I think he just pushed him really over the limit with whatever he was trying to make him do. So Yeah, a pity that Karloff didn't lob something in James Whale's direction, but.
I'd be hard pressed, but Karloff seems to me to, and maybe he was a little more brash when he was younger, but he wasn't that young. He was 40 or nearly 40 by the time he played the monster. And
yeah,
I don't know. For everything I've seen, heard, and read about him, I think he would be too much gentleman to toss a barb at Peckinpah, Whale rather, unless Whale deserved it. That's just an opinion. I don't know that for a fact. Just I'm basing it, and maybe it's more of a feeling, my warm feelings towards Karloff. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something did happen like that, though.
Yeah, I mean, after all this time, someone would spill the tea and dish the dirt, you know, if he did do something. I mean, let's be honest, the man was married almost as time, not as much as Elizabeth Taylor or the Gabor sisters, but he had a lot of ex-wives.
Yeah.
So I don't know what was going on in that field, but but yeah, I have not ever heard anyone or anything online, anyone saying, you know, he did this, he did that, he did this, he did that. I mean, if, you know, I've heard some, you know, we all know Lugosi was an alcoholic. He got into drugs. He went in and out of rehab before it was fashionable. You hear someone going into rehab and say, okay. Whatever.
I believe he's the first actual celebrity to publicly come out and say, hey, I got a problem and I'm going in for help.
Yeah,
he was.
I believe he was the first. And he did. And at his age, he was in his 70s when he did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Part of the problem is he couldn't find any work, I think, and so he decided if he went in and made it public, look, this is my problem, I'll beat my problem, hire me. I think that was his plan. Now it didn't really work.
And now
work
on
that
came
way,
Ed Wood.
But, yeah. That definitely finished his career.
Yeah.
Well, it did then, but now that movie, and that is just, you know, it's classic.
Oh, cult status. Cult status,
oh,
yeah.
What does that mean? Incredible. But I'm so happy that maybe, I think it was a guy, and the fact that, I don't know, he was already divorced, but he made out better getting help than, well, his addiction was drugs and alcohol, but I was thinking, Francis Farmer, I saw that movie recently with Jessica Lange, thank you. She did the biopic about Francis Farmer. That poor woman was put into an asylum, which pretty much was a snake pit because her mother was an idiot. And her mother was
an idiot. Well, they did that a lot in the old days, though, with some people had...
Yeah.
I don't think science knew yet how to deal with some of these things, or very few did. Science is always changing, you know. There's a great quote from Men in Black, what was it, Agent K, you know, Tommy Lee, said, 100 years ago we knew, 200 years ago we knew the world was flat. 150 years ago we knew man could not fly. You know, 50 years ago we knew man would never get to the moon. He goes, I wonder what we'll know tomorrow.
Yeah.
We know that my starship is double parked about 100 miles straight up. Oh, the tickets.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, just in case, we now know that if you're slightly off the deep end, no need to go to the asylum. Just go to a podcast.
There you go. Hey. What do you think we're doing here?
That's right. It's ordered therapy from our psychiatrist. Yes.
Yes. Mine was self-imposed. I'm not paying a psychiatrist. You think I'm nuts?
Yeah. They're not coming to take me away. Hee-hee, ha-ha, ho-ho, ho-ho. Not as long as the Wi-Fi keeps working.
Have you ever owned a copy of the 45 of They're Coming to Take Me Away?
I have not, but I've heard it online, all over the place. Yeah. I've seen it in fan-made videos. It's just perfectly hilarious.
Yes, the flip side is the song in reverse. The B-side.
That's right. That is. I have it on several albums, but I don't have the flip side on. Yeah.
And then there were
before the Beatles.
He did some follow-up songs too. There's one from the Dogs saying, "I'm happy they took you away, haha." And it was almost like a Zsa Zsa Gabor type voice for the dog. It was funny.
I have to listen to that now. I have to go online and find it.
Yeah. There's like a couple. He had Napoleon 14 had all these crazy, crazy, wacky tunes about insanity. And that's kind of what killed that song, is people thought that was rather insensitive about people going a little crazy. So that was a cancellation long ago. He got canceled. Into oblivion or obscurity,
well,
anyway.
It's one thing, I'll give it to, it may have been a little insensitive, but it was better than what most people were doing, not speaking about it at all.
Yeah. Good movie about that, since we were talking about Karloff, Bedlam from 46.
Yes.
Was brought out at a time when there was a great expose on mistreatment of mentally challenged, you know, people that had mental issues in an institution.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it was felt that was kind of done on purpose to kind of bring that to the public's eye a little more.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was a good movie about that. What was another one? It was with Whoopi Goldberg was in it and Angelina Jolie. It wasn't Girl Gone, it was something else. I can't remember the movie. Winona Ryder was in it. She had this
how ironic.
Hey, I did find on YouTube there are several copies of "I'm Happy They Took You Away." Ha ha.
Yeah, that's it. Fabulous. I'm happy they took you away.
Ha ha.
Fabulous.
Yeah, look up Napoleon 14 in general. There's one, I think it's called Split Level Head. It's about schizophrenia. I live in a split level head. Yeah, there's probably a good half dozen of them by him, at least. I think he put out an album at one point. If not, he cut quite a number of singles.
Well, this one says it was done by Josephine 15.
Yeah. That may not have been him. That might have been a spoof.
So from Napoleon 14 to Josephine 15.
Yes.
And I'm happy they took you away.
Yes, well, perhaps we're in a tad more of an enlightened time where you can go on your smart device and speed dial your analyst or pull up an app for that. Just say, all right, calm down. I'm here.
Dave and I have often talked about, if we could only play copyright material. I would love to do an all horror night. I would love to see, and that's something I would love to do when I retire, have an all horror night, have an all novelty night, like a Dr. Demento type thing. Because there's so many good novelty songs.
Very true. What really irks me is this public domain law is just like six of one, half a dozen of the other. There are movies that I know for a fact are in public domain. They're on YouTube, and YouTube has them and then let them stand. But at the same time, the studios that used to own them are still charging people to watch them. And
the problem is when you make a claim or whatever, they'll try to steal your money stream.
Yeah.
Off of your videos. Oh, I should get that. That's mine. And I don't know. I've heard that YouTube does not necessarily have the best system of policing stuff like that.
There's a German company that thinks they own rights to about every big band number ever.
Yeah.
Ever made out there. That's why almost all of my sketch weirdest sketches that I post there. None of them can be shown because or can be monetized because they were because somebody else is claiming rights to the music.
Yeah,
they're copyright trolls, like patent trolls.
Yes,
and unless you have a big wad of cash, or if you just want to proverbially stick it to the man, because there's some people on YouTube that put all these notations on there, I'm not collecting any money, la 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 la, they just put it on there because they're fed up and they just want to say, this is in public domain, I'm not getting nickel the first, good luck, and they put it on there and YouTube won't take it down because whoever these trolls are, they're not dumb enough to try and fight Google, which owns YouTube. Good luck with that.
And on the other hand, there's some things on there that are definitely not public domain, but people are monetizing them. Now, it could be somebody else, not the person who posted it, but I guess. But I said, how do those people get on there and I get all these stinking warnings?
Yeah. I've had a few. I don't get a lot of views. I don't play with YouTube as much as I used to, but
you have to put, I don't know, you have to put these tons and tons of, this is for educational purposes only, this is not for monetization purposes. They put a whole litany of whatever, heretofore, what if and ever and after. I'm thinking a lot of these people are bored law students who want to get away from studying for about 25 minutes, find something, read it up, put it on there, and stick their thumb in the air or their tongue out of their mouth and say, yeah, okay, now go for it. And, you know, if they pull it down, they'll just say, just get a new email address and put it back up. And the trolls pretty much will go after bigger game or fresh meat, as it were.
Damn you, troll.
Yes. Or have you seen...
Get back under the bridge where you belong, troll.
Back. Oh,
I ain't no Billy Goat Gruff.
Gruff. Seeing where people, I don't know how it's done, but when they do put something on there that may be in that gray area or is not in the gray area, they somehow flip the film or the vid. So
I've seen people do that. They flipped it left hand, right hand, or otherwise, or they change the speed of it too. You could tell it slowed down or sped up.
Yeah, if you change it by about 6%, then it doesn't, at least the Facebook Live stuff doesn't get caught if you change it by about 6%, which isn't that much of a difference, but it's enough of a difference.
It's
that
noticeable.
The mechanics can't catch that it was something else. So.
Yeah.
And isn't there some sort of law? They already fought this in court, and, for example, doing a riff track where riff tracks can show the entire movie regular, but, you know, they go in and put a little parody or a little funny dialogue through it. So you can do a parody. So I'm of the opinion you could probably show E.T., the extraterrestrial, more or less, or whatever's in public domain, and just go and snip this and say yada, 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 and then be quiet, let the movie run, do it again, yada, yada, yada. And it's totally legal to do a parody, but... because it somehow kicks the law in the can, so to speak.
I thought about using these fan movies of like Star Trek and Star Wars and stuff. They make these fan movies, and they're because of they were starting to make money from them, and you're not allowed to do that. They now limit them on time and all kinds of different restrictions, but they still allow them, and. I've contacted several of these groups saying, hey, this is great. Can I share this on my internet TV show? And never, ever, ever, ever hear back from them. You know, it's just, so technically it's theirs, but technically in another way it isn't because they can't profit from it. So. But I won't use it without permission. You know, it just
I don't know. They're probably either gun shy because CBS or Sony or I don't know who owns Star Trek today. I mean, it's so splintered. You have the movies, then you have the television shows, and you have the original series. You have Paramount, and you have CBS, and then Sony, and whoever owns the toy rights. And it's just like Kolchak and Night Stalker. They're all three networks, the original three networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS, eventually were showing it, even though it originated with ABC. Then now you can watch all the series of Night Stalker on Peacock TV? No, NBC.com. NBC.com has it.
Yep, it does, yeah.
Sci-Fi has it, too. There's a Sci-Fi Roku channel, SYFY.
Yeah, speaking of Roku,
I think it grabs from other streams, though. It's got all the Amazing Stories, the Steven Spielberg Amazing Stories. It's got all the Kolchaks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good stuff. Is that the sci-fi?
SYFY, yeah. I stumbled on it. It was hard to find in there, but I finally stumbled on it. I'm like, oh, cool.
Really?
And it has links to other streams, though.
Oh, okay.
It's weird.
So do you have to have a Roku player to play that, or can you just stream it on your computer?
That I don't know. You might need an app or something. I don't know.
So some apps, especially with Windows 10, some apps work on Windows 10. Some apps are made for the just an Android device. And but the Roku, which really isn't all that expensive, it just connects to your Wi-Fi, just has just literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of channels. So
nice.
I think you get one for about $29. You can get a Roku device.
Yeah.
And
as long as your TV has an HDMI plug-in and you get one of those, it's a one-time fee. And there's channels you have to pay for, but there's a lot of free channels. There are a lot of free channels.
Oh, no. Ever since you guys put me on through the three-piece, Pluto, Peacock, and Plex,
they're
all free.
Yes, and they're good. I mean, they got good
stuff,
too.
They're very good.
Yeah. Pluto gives you a lot of variety.
It does, yeah. And they also have programs on Pluto, at least on the app. They have shows that aren't streaming. You can go to it other times.
They do on the Roku. You can either do what they have streaming live, you know, on their various channels, or you can go in and play out of their library.
Yeah. And I know on one of those, there was a British show called The Invisibles. They're a bunch of old guys. They were great robbers in their day, and then they just quit. I think one of them got hurt or killed or something, and they just stopped doing it. And after that, they came out of it like 20 or 25 years later, something like that, to do a job to help one of the guys out. And never made it to a second season, but I thought it was a very fun show. These old guys trying to do stuff they did 25 years before, getting away with it, but not by much.
Sounds like fun. Well gang, I gotta do me some puppy wrangling.
And I must be away as well. So without further ado, is Mr. Durante in the room? Mr. Durante, are you here, sir? Here? Mr. Durante? Hello? Hello?
Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Horrible up we the same, and it could think it do. Good night. Night. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
I'll be here saying goodbye.
Goodbye already. I do.